Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, as always, if you have a comment or indeed a question for Eamon Shanahan, please send it in to us on 083 300 3300. And remember, if you are texting or WhatsApping your comment and or question, let us know whether you're male or female and a rough idea of your age. For just like this person, Eamon, we'll start. Eamon, good afternoon, first of all.
Good afternoon, Deirdre. How are you?
Good, good. We're going to start with this 25-year-old man, Eamon. He's an ongoing cough for nearly 3 months. He doesn't smoke. Yeah. He doesn't vape. He got a nasal spray, steroids and antibiotics, but there's been no change. What should he do next?
Yeah. Okay. So where we've got a persistent cough like that, and assuming that there's nothing else going on, and what it means by that is, as long as his general health is reasonably good otherwise and there's no sort of concerns about his health otherwise, I'd be looking specifically at the fact, the likelihood that his airways are inflamed, that there is an allergic process of some sort going on. I know he doesn't smoke and he doesn't vape, which is absolutely very positive and really, really good. My strong suspicion is that there would be inflammation of the airways themselves. Now, the difficulty is that while there are some indirect blood tests you can do for allergy, and that's probably the best way I can describe it, there are no specific tests to show whether or not somebody has inflammation of the airways, short of doing a thing called a bronchoscopy, which is fairly invasive. In large measure, it's a question oftentimes of what we call a therapeutic trial. I know he said he's been taking steroid tablets, but my sense would be that he would probably benefit from taking a steroid inhaler. The rationale for that is that it delivers the anti-inflammatory medication to where it's needed, and because you're delivering it there, it doesn't need to go through the rest of the body, and it doesn't cause the side effects of taking steroid tablets. There would be a benefit in that there is actually a combination inhaler and inhaler that has both the anti-inflammatory medication and a medication that opens up the airways. The other possibility is that he may have a condition called chronic cough, which is an extremely difficult and troublesome condition. It's just some individuals, unfortunately, they get this kind of itch cycle in their throat, and as they cough, it causes irritation, and that makes them cough more and more. That's a very troublesome thing. But I would go down the route of trying to reduce reduce inflammation in the areas by use of the appropriate inhaler. So long story short, they need to go back and talk to their own GP about that.
Very good. Well, at least you've given them some pointers there and some indication of what might be going on. This next one comes in from somebody, again, unfortunately, they don't leave a name, you don't have to leave a name, but they don't leave an age or whether they're male or female, so we'll have to do a bit of guessing. But this person says their liver blood count is 110. The question is, is this very dangerous and what can I do to bring this down?
Yeah. Okay. So, firstly, a figure of 110 is not necessarily of itself necessarily a problem. In this case, what you'd be looking for is what were your liver test levels previously. The context for this is that the liver has an enormous capacity to absorb punishment. I've certainly seen some individuals who have had up to 90% of their liver removed by surgery, to be able to function with the remaining 10%, and indeed for the liver to grow back. And in many cases where the liver is being abused, it will recover. I think what I'd be more interested in is this 110 level that you've been at for some time, or is it something that's developed in the recent past? The difficulty with the 110 is just indicates that there is something putting pressure on the liver. The question is, what's putting the pressure on the liver? And that's the bit that needs to be reviewed. Many years ago, I was involved in clinical trials, and what we were looking for were to make sure that the person's liver tests were not more than 3 or 5 times what's called the upper limit of normal. So that would be figures of 300 or 400. If somebody had figures like that, it would probably be cause for concern. Again, the point we're driving at, it's not whether or not at 110, it's not necessarily dangerous, but it depends on what you were previously. So that's where you go back to your own GP and they'll discuss the results with you. And how you treat it is to treat the underlying cause, and then the problem goes away.
Now, no surprise, Eamon, we've had a few questions in about the flu that's doing the rounds at the moment.
Yes.
elderly female caller wants to know what medication should she have in stock in case she gets the flu over Christmas, or what would help to prevent a flu?
Okay, the only thing that'll prevent a flu is a flu vaccination. It's still not too late to get your vaccine, even at this stage. The treatment is very much to keep yourself comfortable. The problem with, firstly, influenza is a viral infection. There are medications that people at risk can be given, but they can only be given on prescription. If you develop influenza, you can't stock up on these. Otherwise, it's going to be mostly talk to your chemist about things that you can have in the house, things for cough, things for aches and pains, temperature and so on, to keep yourself comfortable, to get yourself through these things. Fortunately, the majority of people who are sick at the moment have just the ordinary common or garden colds, and usually with the appropriate medications or treatments you can get from your chemist, that will keep you comfortable until you come out the far side of it. If you're misfortunate enough to develop influenza, as I said before, a vaccination is the only thing that will reduce the risk and reduce the severity of it. If you do develop influenza, you may well need to seek help. Most practices are going to be open until Christmas Eve, and then self-doctor will be available over Christmas if you run into trouble.
A texter who is a 70-year-old female says, will you ask Dr. Eamon, I have a pain at the back of my left knee. I'm on Difene for arthritis.
Yeah, one of the things that'd be interesting is to, you know, for somebody to put a hand on the knee and just see what the story is. There is a thing that can develop at the back of the knee called a Baker cyst. I think it's named after a person rather than the trade. What it is it's a collection of fluid at the back of the knee that can gradually grow in size and can be quite uncomfortable. That's the reason why I'm saying that it would be useful for somebody to actually examine your knee for you to feel to see whether or not you've got this thing at the back of the knee. If you do have a Baker cyst, it's a purely mechanical problem. You can use medications to relieve the discomfort, but generally the only way to get rid of it is by having surgery. It's possible that you have arthritis there, but it's not likely to cause pain at the back of the knee. It's more likely to cause pain down the shin. So it's more likely that if you've got a pain in the back of the knee, it's this condition called a Baker cyst, or that you have given yourself some of a twist and some of the ligaments or tendons or tender or sore. One way or the other, somebody needs to put a hand in the leg for you.
A texter says, Eamon, could you recommend a good tonic for a woman in her mid-60s recovering from major surgery?
Yeah. My argument has always been that we all have the best possible tonic around us, in that we have amongst the best food in the world. And if you eat a well-balanced and very nutritionally high diet, that's probably the best tonic of all. If you do wish to get a tonic of some sort, I'd recommend talk to your chemist about that, because they certainly know more about it than I would.
Okay, Eamon, we're going to take a break at this point, but we have a question in from a lady who's concerned about her husband and particularly about his mental health, and I think it's quite timely to ask it, because as we all say, it's a tough time of the year for many people.
It's a tough time of the year, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So we'll come to that one after this break.
Talk About on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. Due to popular demand, our dine-in Killarney menu continues every Thursday in December. For booking details and menu, visit our Facebook page.
Got an opinion? Share it with Deirdre. Talk About on Radio Kerry.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital, Tralee. Celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
And a warm welcome back, and thank you for all your comments coming in and your questions for Eamon. We'll try and get through as many of them as we can. Eamon, this lady gets in touch. She's worried about her 49-year-old husband. She says, I've just realised, having thought about it in recent weeks, that he has become a bit withdrawn. I think he might be depressed. He's worked very hard all year, and yet we still have financial difficulties like so many other people. I don't want to say it straight out to him. Any other advice?
Okay. And this is unfortunately an extremely common problem. There is a spectrum, if you like, between those people who are just, and I say just being a very relative term, stressed and hassled because of various worries or concerns through through to those individuals who are severely affected by depression, and there's all sorts of shades along the way. The probably the hardest bit, and this is one of the challenges we have when we're looking after men who may have mental health problems, is that they're not the best for talking. They're not the greatest for sharing, and it can be very difficult to get them to open up about the condition or how they are themselves, I should say. There are plenty of resources available. In fact, interestingly, if you go to the HSE website and if you, you know, start searching for mental health, you'll see there are quite a number of resources all over the country, including in Kerry, that people can tap into. And there are online resources that are available as well. Now, I'm not being specific about this, because what I'm suggesting is that our listener look to see what's available and let her work out, because she will obviously know her husband better than anybody else, what she thinks might work best for him. Mostly what it is about is trying to help the person to be able to speak through the issues. The old cliche about the problem shared is the problem halved is very, very true. Sometimes it can be very difficult to discuss subjects, particularly if it has to do with mental health, with our next of kin or our nearest and dearest and our spouses and so on. And it might be easier actually to talk to somebody else about it. But to recognise, I think the main thing is the jargon is to normalise the distress. And what it means by that is that it is not abnormal to be distressed because you're in financial difficulties. That's not abnormal at all. But to recognise that the feelings you're experiencing are actually a normal reaction to the stress you're undergoing. And this, in one sense, can actually help a lot of people, because they feel that they're losing it, they're not going to be able to cope, and they're going to come asunder and all the rest of it. And in actual fact, it's sort of the very opposite, because if you can share the issue with other people and discuss it through with them, you may find from that ways and means by which you can cope with the particular situation you're in at the moment.
Yeah, the poor lady, though, I mean, she says she doesn't want to say it directly to him, straight out to him. But
I don't think I would be talking about tackling him straight out. But what I was recommending is seeing the resources that are available, because from that, then she may find pathways that will be useful to her to help her help her husband, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's good that she's recognised it anyway, because sometimes I think family members can be depressed under our noses and we don't even know it.
We know it, yeah.
Well, best of luck to that lady, and I hope everything works out all right for herself and her husband, because there are so many people in financial problems and they're exacerbated by the time of year.
Absolutely.
Sarah was in touch with us. She's an otherwise healthy 60-year-old, but she's just over the flu, and she says it's the real flu. It lasted 2 weeks. She says, I feel okay now, but I still have a pain out the right hand side of my back, probably near my lungs from coughing so much. How long should this pain last after the cough is gone?
Oh, God only knows. And not actually be facetious or smart about that one. The difficulty is that any and all viral infections can cause a so-called post-viral fatigue syndrome. So you can get tiredness and aches and pains, which is very variable. I can say that statistically, the vast majority of people will be much improved, will be completely improved or vastly, vastly improved by 6 months out. And a lot of people will be sorted after a week or two. But for each individual, you can't tell how long it's going to take for them to recover. I think the issue here is to try to find whatever works for you in terms of relief of your problem, of your symptom, be it taking simple paracetamol or an ibuprofen or something like that, or indeed heat or massage or whatever works. This thing will go in time. It just takes time. And that, of course, presumes that your health is recovering otherwise. The difficulty is that after most viruses, including influenza can have these situations where you can have aches and pains for a variable period of time afterwards. And you just can't tell from person to person how long it's going to take.
Yeah, this is it. We wish her all the best for a speedy recovery. We've a female caller who has carpal tunnel in her right hand. She says she will be seeing a doctor about this in the Bonds in February, but she's wondering what could she take for pain relief in the meantime?
The problem with carpal tunnel is that there is a swelling in what's called the carpal tunnel, which is the bit of your wrist, literally at your wrist. If you put your one hand around your other wrist, that's the carpal tunnel. There's bone at the back, there's a tight sheet of tissue across the front of the wrist, and the space inside is inflamed, and that is squashing the nerves, and that's the reason why you're getting the pain. So if you use an anti-inflammatory, talk to your chemist about over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medications, and keeping the arm up, elevation. Because what that will do is it'll help drain fluid out of the hand and out of the arm, and that way reduce the pressure as well.
Okay, a 76-year-old caller has a trapped nerve in her leg. She also has arthritis. What can she do?
Again, you're looking at probably taking an anti-inflammatory. Now, the issue with anti-inflammatories is anti-inflammatories are effective medications, but they also carry with them the risk of side effects. I would always start by talking to your chemist to see what they can advise you about over-the-counter preparations. But if this continues to be a problem, then you need to talk to your own GP, because they'll know your own situation and circumstances better. And try and find, I suppose the best way I can put it is the least worst anti-inflammatory. In other words, the medication that hopefully will relieve your symptoms and minimise the risk of side effects from the medication.
And finally, Eamon, we've a person who wants to know how to get rid of warts.
Yeah, an interesting one. So the warts are caused by the wart virus, and the same applies to the verruca in our feet. In the short term, you can use, there's a variety of mechanical, chemical methods that you can use. So freezing, burning, using caustic solutions and things like that will kill off the dead skin that's part of the wart. In truth, the only thing that ever makes the wart go away is when the person develops an immunity to the virus. And when they do, the warts just disappear overnight. The problem is you can't bring this on and you don't know how long it's going to last. So for the most part, what you're doing is you're treating the problem, which is the unsightly lumps of skin. And you do that by, as I said, dissolving it with caustic solutions or using freezing or burning to try and get rid of them. I say freezing, and the caustic is probably the one that's used most. Caustic you can get from your own GP. Freezing you could go to your GP or go to see a skin specialist about.
Eamon, we leave you on a humorous note. We were talking at the start of the programme to a professor in UL about longevity, and a big study done on longevity. Someone texted in and said, I know somebody in Kerry who lived to be nearly 100. He said his secret was, ate like a horse, work like a mule and drink like a fish.
Good for him. I love it.
Maybe no comment. It might be the best. Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Great wisdom in that, I think.
Yeah, fantastic.
We'll talk to you next week. All the best. Bye, Eamon.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye. That's Dr. Eamon.